gentlemen, boys and girls, sports fans around the world, welcome to episode 2 of the 2018 edition of On the Point. I'm Rob from the East Coast. We have Aaron from the West Coast. And as I sit back and sip my Brooklyn IPA beer, I'm going to give Aaron the pass there on the floor for about 5 minutes to just say his piece about what happened on Sunday.
So Super Bowl recap from my point of view. So I would say the biggest thing for me to take away from that game was our atrocious defense and how just absolutely terrible we looked and played. That to me is just the biggest thing that I saw that was my takeaway from it, was just that we couldn't stop them. You know, do I think not having Malcolm Butler played a deal in it? Potentially, yeah. You could say either way. His non-playing took away with it. I think all the talk of Brady being old and being played out, well, I think throwing for 500-something yards, that just silenced that critic. Answer that question. But overall, I mean, hats off to the Eagles. They played a hell of a game. They came and looked like a hell of a team, that the stage wasn't too big. You know, everyone talked about leading up to the game, their lack of experience in big games, lack of Super Bowl experience, but that to me, it didn't really matter. They were the better team that day. They came out and made the plays that they needed to play, so hats off to them. But definitely that was my biggest thing, was our offense played amazing. You know, Brady made one mistake, and that was it. And, you know, that one mistake ultimately, was the game. You know, they gave up one sack, and unfortunately, it was the wrong time to give it up.
You had one job. One job.
Yeah. I'm not, you know, upset. You know, I'm not salty over this. I don't think it changes Brady's legacy. Oh, he's lost 3 Super Bowls. Okay, he's still won 5. so that's me going 5-3. Yeah, it's okay, cool. You know, other guys are, Bradshaw's 4-0 and all of this. And it's like, okay, yeah.
Montana being 4-0.
Yeah. Okay, and, you know, Brady's 5-3. So, if you ask Bradshaw if they would take their 4-0 or 5-3 with, you know, the 3 losses being potentially, you know, one player or another that went the other way and being 8-0, I'm pretty sure they'd take it. And any sports fan to me, I would be hard-pressed to believe that anyone would say that, you know, they would take a perfect 4-0 opportunity over a 5-3 record in the Super Bowl, you know, and that to me is just kind of the biggest takeaway from it. And all the wins and losses, you can say, oh, either way, they were close. You know, people always said, you know, leading into the game, they've only won by, you know, X amount of points. They've never won by this amount of points. And that to me is going to leave me, and, you know, we're going to do the rant section at the end of the show, and I'll save it for that. But like I said last week, is, you know, I hate when people try and take away from someone's greatness, or, you know, say they're great, but, or this. It's like, okay, guy, I don't have any Super Bowls. You never even made it to the NFL. So for you to sit here and just, you know, try and define, you know, Brady's career or whatever, and justify it. And it's like, oh, this and oh, that, or but this and but that. It's like, yeah, I don't like LeBron, but you know what? He's still the goddamn best player in the NBA right now. And more on him later. And all of this stuff, it's like you don't have to like the person. You don't have to like the team. But just give them a respect that they deserve, that they've earned, and just stop always trying to justify, you know, someone's greatness or a team's greatness or someone's success by, you know, trying to find a way to say, yeah, but, or this, or that. It's like at the end of the day, you know, they won regardless how you feel about it, and just kind of let it go, so. And the whole, oh, Brady didn't shake Nick Foles' hand, shit.
He's a man.
Why
he's
is Brady
man
getting the pass?
Have you seen Foles' post-game interviews? Foles is a man of God. If Brady doesn't shake Nick Foles' hand, what does that say about Brady?
That he was pissed that he lost the Super Bowl.
And that's exactly right. He was pissed that he lost the Super Bowl. I don't understand why there's so much commotion about that and so much criticism. I even saw comparisons. I even saw comparisons
just
about him and Cam. Exactly. Like, come on. I mean, for all we know, Tom couldn't get to Nick because there were just too many reporters in the field. Or maybe Malcolm Butler was crying somewhere and he had to step over him. I have no idea.
But, I mean, it's just – it's stuff like that that's just frustrating, and it's like – why? Like, why is this? How is this? And what is this even a story? This has nothing to do with anything or whatever. You know, and it's like the same thing that people, you know, with the earlier this year when Odell Beckham put up the, you know, the Twitter video of him and his sideline meltdowns compared to, you know, Tom Brady and his. And it's like, oh, he gets labeled as this and someone else gets labeled as that. It's like, both of the guys are passionate, and both of them truly care about what they do and what's going on the field. So it's like, I agree with Odell. It's like, but at the end of the day, don't blame Brady. Brady isn't the one that's making these comparisons or making these things. Like, it's the media. They're the ones that are putting this spin or thought process on stuff that's out there. So it's just like, there's no rule saying you can't, you know, show emotion. You know, people handle crap differently. And it's just like, to me, it's like, I would rather have that guy on the sideline than the James Harden who loses in, you know, the playoffs and an hour later is in the club with Kylie, you know, at the strip club chilling, you know, with the Kardashians. Like, bro, you just didn't look like your season's over and you at the club already with a bottle? Like, damn, homie. Like, just at least care, but it's like I'd rather have that kid who's breaking down on the sideline crying than anything else. And we were going way off topic. It got nothing to do with the Super Bowl, but, man, I don't know. It's just
I'll add one quick comment to that. For me, it comes down to sportsmanship and good sportsmanship versus poor sportsmanship. Now, shaking the opposing quarterback's hand is just understood as being – displaying good sportsmanship. However, I don't believe that Brady looked Foles in the eye and deliberately said to himself, I'm not going to shake this guy's hand. We don't know the circumstances after the game. It's the biggest game of the year. The Eagles won in, you know, somewhat of dramatic fashion. It was their first Super Bowl ever. You know, if there ever were to be a report where Brady deliberately, you know, ignored Foles or deliberately didn't give him his respect, maybe I'd feel differently. But I don't think that there's any evidence, nor do I feel that Brady deliberately, you know, ignored him or didn't want to show him any of his respect or give him his props or whatever the case may be. So I do think that it was blown out of proportion. But the James Harden thing was so ridiculous. We're not going to get into that right now. We can't. We can't talk about James Harden and his lack of emotion. That's a whole another hour-long show right there if we choose to do so. I did have a little bit of a criticism of one remark that Brady made, and I think you kind of referenced it when you were going on your little 5-minute rant, if you will. In Brady's press conference, I think he may have been a little salty. He was like, yeah, they made one good play. They made it at the right time. Come on, bro. One good play? They made a lot of good plays. But, no, at the end of the game, I'm sure emotions were flying super high. I'm sure Brady didn't mean or didn't intend wasn't suggesting that that was the only good play of the game the Eagles made. I just found it a little bit funny the way it came out of his mouth. Yeah, they made one good play at the right time. They won.
Yeah. And see, this is – and my thing is it's like – my frustration with stuff like that is it's during the Super Bowl, the biggest game that every single person who suits up on all teams from preseason that they work to get. So when you go in and then you lose in the dramatic fashion of that, like, you know, you feel like everyone, I'm pretty sure, felt, you know, okay, here we go again. Two timeouts, two, you know, 2:20-something on the clock, Patriots get the ball, driving down the field. That was what was going to happen. That's what everyone was thinking. So, you know, I agree, yeah, it's probably a little bit of salt behind it, but because, you know, they didn't just make one great play. But I think everything's just over-magnified, and I think sometimes people got to forget, you know, lose sight that this is the Super Bowl. This is – that's it. You know, this is what they train for in the offseason. This is what every single person, this is why they battle. So it's like, yeah, when you lose, you know.
Is this not why you are here?
Kind of like,
is this not why you are here?
Yeah. It's like, why? It's like, what do you expect this guy to do? It's like, oh, let me go chase down Nick Foles, run through the confetti. Let me go do this stuff. Let me say all the right things. It's just like the same thing with Cam. It's like, you hear the other team over there talking shit about you and your team, and you know all the blood, sweat, and tears literally that you guys put in to get there and to come up short, and then you just see everyone else, and it's just kind of like, man, this just isn't the time for me to for you to ask me these dumbass questions. How do you feel? How the fuck do you think I feel? I don't even know if it's about to, oh, well. But it's just, like,
yeah, you know, there was one point during the Nick Foles press conference where I don't know what the question was, but I believe the reporter asked Nick Foles, "How are you doing?" And Nick Foles says, "Good. How are you doing?" And I'm just like, "What is going on here?" It was kind of funny to me. I'm not sure if he caught that or if he even, you know, watched his press conference in all of your despair.
To be honest
sadness.
With you, I haven't turned on the TV, listen to any of the stuff, because it's just the whole, now everyone's going to say, oh, you know, Brady's not the GOAT anymore, all these things, and it's like, here we go. Like, you said all year he was the greatest, now he comes out, makes one play, but we overlook everything else that the guy has done, all the records he set, and then just say, oh, well, he's not the GOAT. Or we start to justify and proclaim someone's greatness, or we start to compare and say, oh, well, you know, this and oh, well, that. And it's just like, well, at the end of the day, it's a subjective thing, but at the end of the day, if you don't think that he is one of the top two quarterbacks ever to play the game in history, then to me it's just kind of like, I think you're just stupid and biased, and it's like you're just saying it to be the outlying person when all of his stats, you know, prove otherwise. And it's like, okay, I can erase all names and just put stats in front of you and say, who's the better quarterback? And no one would know. It's like, okay. You know, and that's just my thing with all
well,
of this stuff.
Well, I live here in Jersey, and I believe – if I can kind of dissect what you're saying, you were pretty much just calling every single New York Jets fan stupid and biased, because I guarantee you not one New York Jets fan would call Brady a top two quarterback.
I agree, but they won't call him that because of their salt towards him.
Of course, Brady's one of the top quarterbacks to ever play the sport of American football. I will never doubt that. But before I get into, or before we get into some specific topics, stats, points about the game itself, Aaron, wouldn't it be so interesting, or wouldn't it have been so interesting if back in the 70s, 70s, 80s, even early 90s, when there was so much bad blood in the NBA and players were literally just fighting each other on seemingly a nightly basis. If there was all this social media around the clock 24/7, I would love to know how Jordan felt about Charles Barkley in the 90s. I would have loved to know a lot of these things about the NBA back then, but we didn't have that access to the players. And for all we know, they could have been just as bad or even worse than things are nowadays in sports. What if? What if?
Yeah. And that's my biggest thing was, like, you know, we sit here and we do this, and then it's like, okay, so you telling me that every year, every single person on both teams makes it a point to at least shake or hug or talk to one person from the other team. Every single Super Bowl, and Cam and Brady, the only ones that ever been salty. You gotta be kidding me, man. Like, this is
exactly
stuff like that. That's why I get so frustrated with stuff when people, you know, post and say, oh, I'm judging him based off of this. So you mean to tell me in the history of sports, in the history of the Super Bowl, we do it with the Super Bowl. And I was like, well, if that's the problem, then it's like, you can't like Brady. You got to be pissed off about this. You can't like that. Because then if not, then it's like, I mean, at the end of the day, different people handle emotions differently. And so for me, it's just like, I don't understand how or why that is. And it's kind of like the same thing with T.O., you know, they're like using the reason why it took him so long was because of all his off the field antics and all that stuff. And it's like, look, at the end of the day, I was not a T.O. fan. T.O. deserved to be in the Hall of Fame, and he deserved to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But, you know, he got in. And so for me, it's stuff like that that I'm just like, okay, people, like, let's stop. You forget, and we put these athletes on a pedestal. And at the end of the day, we forget they're human, and that, you know,
and
yeah,
the word, and
it's
the
okay
words,
for them
the
to show an emotion.
In the words of Randy Moss's longtime Minnesota Vikings teammate, Chris Carter, come on, man. I agree with you 100%. So let's run through a handful of things from the game, and then we'll get on to some NBA talk. I'm sure this is common knowledge by now that Brady, unfortunately, in a losing effort, threw for the most passing yards ever in a Super Bowl, breaking his own record in which he set last year in what was, of course, a victory for Brady and the Patriots. Do you find that does that make things sting a little bit more? Sorry to just, you know, boil your blood there, Aaron, but does that make this sting a little bit more? Like, man, 505 yards, I believe I have that number correct, Super Bowl record, 33 points, and we lost? I know you referenced the New England defense as one main reason as to why they lost, but that's got to make things a little more frustrating, doesn't it?
It does. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like if there is a shining point, it's that. And like I said, it's because that's it, you know, everyone's like, oh, well, he played bad in December. Okay. He's not allowed to have a bad month. Like,
he's not. He's Tom Brady.
I know. It's like if he doesn't come out and throw for 300-something yards, you know, three touchdowns, no interceptions, all that stuff, uh-oh, he's getting old. Uh-oh, he's losing it. Uh-oh, it's this. But you only use that with him, but then you turn around and say, well, he isn't the best, but then you compare him to the best, and then you say this. So it's just kind of like I hate the flip-flopping. I hate that. Just keep the same energy. Keep the same consistency across the table. Like, you know, at the end of the day, it's just frustrating. I feel like it's somewhat of a wasted effort, but, I mean, it is ultimately a team game. The defense played bad, and then, you know, Tom made a mistake too at the end. And ultimately, you know, that's what cost us. But, you know, it is what it is.
I was going to feed into a point about New England losing both their offensive and defensive coordinators, but I'm not sure if you guys have heard the breaking news today where McDaniels has decided not to join the Indianapolis Colts. So who knows what's going to happen there? The rumors will start swirling for sure.
Yeah. So we can kind of use that to you know, levy it into it. So it's like, I think Andrew Luck's progress of where he is at plays a part in it, and I think you'll start to hear some of the rumor mills about where he is physically. The guy is still young, so he can play, but I definitely think that because the Colts have been very, very hush-hush on him, he has been very, very hush-hush on his status.
I mean, he was originally supposed to come back during the season.
This year.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah,
it was.
Had another surgery this year, though.
Yeah, there's a lot that we don't know about Andrew Luck's health. There's a lot that we don't know about Andrew Luck's future. There's a lot that we don't know about the Colts organization. So you make a very good point, one in which you ran with very well.
Yeah. So I think it's that, and then I also think that with Belichick on his way out, I think, you know, the Pats have kind of basically had Josh McDaniels as the head coach in waiting now. That's kind of the heir to the throne of Belichick, and I think that's what they've kind of promised him. And I actually think it's a smart move for the Pats to kind of keep the train running and taking a page out of Pittsburgh's book with, just kind of hiring internally and bringing the guys up, from within the organization.
Yeah, I mean, there's also some questions about the Patriots coaching staff in general. Patricia is, of course, leaving for Detroit, but McDaniels, who knows what his role is going to be going forward. Of course, if Belichick remains the head coach, I'm sure McDaniels' role isn't going to change one bit as the offensive coordinator. But going back to the Colts, and Aaron, you and I were discussing this a little bit earlier, or rather I was making this argument where, hey, we've seen this happen with Belichick, with the Jets. What if McDaniels just looked himself in the mirror and was like, you know what? I just don't want to go to Indianapolis. I don't want to go to the city. I don't think this team's very good. I don't think this organization is very good, aside from their Super Bowl championship with Peyton Manning. I don't know what's going on with Andrew Luck, or perhaps he does, and this is the main reason why, as you mentioned. But I could easily see McDaniels being like, no. You know, I initially made a mistake. I don't want to leave a good thing here in New England, and I'm good. I am good.
Yeah.
Let's get into some of the – go ahead. Another point about good old McDaniels. Go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just think that I think Indy is one organization within the NFL that is a stable organization. I think it's the two biggest things. I think the Pats sold him on being a head coach in waiting, and I honestly think Andrew's luck health plays a role. That to me is just the biggest thing and the biggest concern, and, you know, which is it's been 13 months, and the guy, you don't see him. He hasn't even thrown a football yet. And that to me is very concerning. We saw what happened to Deshaun Watson, and yesterday he started running on the treadmill and stuff like that. So obviously he's making progress, but you know, to me, it's just that to me are the two biggest things that we'll probably hear coming out of it is the status of Andrew Luck, and then also probably they'll say that he's the head coach in waiting, or maybe overall that Belichick's out. He's just going to retire and amid all the controversy, and McDaniels will, take the throne with Brady, for his last year and kind of be that transition piece. So we'll see. A lot more to come.
Well, as an orthopedic physical therapist, I will say that shoulder rehabilitation is much more complex than that of the knee, especially an ACL reconstruction. But it does make me extremely concerned that we know very little about Andrew Luck's progress. So let's talk about a guy, or just to quote Chris Collinsworth, here's a guy who did not get to play defense at all during the Super Bowl, Malcolm Butler. I mean, the rumors were swirling like a tornado for the last couple of days. He recently made a post on social media where he's trying to debunk all of these rumors and all these criticisms and negative reports about why he was benched. their replacement, I believe it was Rowe who replaced Malcolm Butler, was kind
yes,
of getting
Eric
torched by he was kind of getting torched by Alshon Jeffrey in the early part of that game. And I don't know what Malcolm Butler did that was so bad where Bill Belichick, the genius, is sitting there in the sideline like, oh, my gosh, I don't want to put this guy in despite the product I'm seeing on the field. But I'm not sure about the extent of what he did, at least from Butler's point of view. He did a whole bunch of nothing. Belichick has somewhat of a history of playing chess with his players from time to time. Butler is going to become a free agent next year. They were discussed the possibility of trading him before the season began to my beloved New Orleans Saints. I don't know if there's a personal thing going on, but regardless of all of that, it's the Super Bowl. If he's going to help your team win, man, he had to have done something to rub Belichick the wrongest of ways to not see that field. But what's the latest that you've heard on some of that?
So I've heard all the rumors of the missing the curfew and the weed, but he has since come out and made a post on social media saying that the rumors aren't true. He was with his family every night. He never missed a curfew, any of that stuff. So it'll be interesting to hear what happens. I don't think the Patriots bring him back the way he found it. It's like he wasn't coming back. But, you know, do I think he could have made a difference? Yes. How much of a difference was it going to be in order to, you know, win the game? That I don't know. That we'll never know. I just can't say that if you simply replace him that the Eagles still don't make the plays that they made against Eric Rowe. I don't know if that's true or not. And so,
Aaron, we talked about experience and how it was evident that the Eagles' lack of experience didn't seem to matter. I don't know if that's the case with Mr. Eric Rowe, because I'll tell you what, Malcolm Butler played the highest percentage of defensive snaps among anybody on that entire defense. That is the epitome of experience. This whole thing is a head scratcher.
I'm not saying he didn't have the experience. I'm just saying that does he still stop Alshon Jeffrey from going up and getting that touchdown? I don't know.
Right.
You know, my thing is because it's more so for me. It was okay. Malcolm Butler is a smaller guy, so Alshon Jeffrey is huge, so. Does Malcolm Butler stop him? I don't know. From a pure size standpoint, I can say he's still going to go up and go get it. just based off of the fact that that's just, to me, it's the bigger man is going to get the ball. It don't matter how great you are. You know, sometimes
it's amazing how improved. Man, I agree. But I think all things considered, I would prefer the experience. But,
I'm just saying, I'm speaking more so for when they had Eric Rowe at the beginning of the game on Alshon. Because once they put Gilmore on Alshon Jeffrey, you never heard from him again. That's when it became Aguilar. That's when it became Clement, the running back, out of the backfield. You never once Gilmore went over to Alshon, he was quiet. He didn't, you know, that's when Zach Ertz came in too, and I don't think you put Butler on Zach Ertz. He's stopping Zach Ertz either. You know, that's mini Gronk right there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that's what for me, it's kind of like, okay, does Aguilar then make the plays that he makes and stuff like that? So that to me was kind of, I think they saw the Pats had a weakness. They attacked the weakness and they took full advantage of it. What do they then do with Butler? Because, you know, okay, does that mean Zach Ertz now just goes off and has a bigger game than he did because he didn't have anyone really an answer for him? You know, I don't know. We can't know. We can all sit here and speculate and say, oh, well, this and that. To me, it's just kind of like we don't know. Yeah, I would have rather had his experience out there over Eric Rowe or anybody else that, or Joseph Bottomuse or whoever. But, you know, that to me was just the biggest thing. Yeah, I think his experience and his leadership would have helped. But also at the same time, you know, if he did something wrong and, you know, it is true of what the rumors are, then I fully support the coach. It was kind of like, you put yourself in that situation. You know, just because you are a player of a certain stature, to me, a rule is a rule. You break a rule, you break a rule. It's the same way, you know, no one's above the law. You know, if you're out here smoking weed and partying up, to me, it's like, you don't, you're doing that the week of the Super Bowl. You know, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you are Tom Brady, put in Brian Hoyer. Like that, to me, you don't even have your team's interest at that point if this is what you're doing. You know, that to me is just, you know, it's just ridiculous. So, you know, it is what it is. We don't know. So, and then hopefully when it comes out, you know, we can kind of judge from there.
Well, the success that the Eagles were having passing the ball earlier in the first quarter, in particular to Alshon Jeffrey. And by the way, I talked about Aguilar a little bit in last week's show. And Aguilar this season compared to his first two in the league, and also Alshon Jeffrey compared to his time with Chicago and the injuries that he was sustaining, man, those two receivers have come a long way. And they fit the Eagles' system well, and they both had – phenomenal seasons, and obviously had good games on Sunday, but that's a pretty great receiving core if you throw in Zach Ertz and all those backs they have. You know, who knows what the team's going to look like next year, but I don't think enough credit is given to the Eagles wide receiving core and those two guys in particular with the success they've had this season compared to previously in their careers. But the success that they were having toward Alshon Jeffrey allowed Nick Foles to capture one of the greatest intangibles in all of sports. And that intangible, my friend, is confidence. I said last week that if the Eagles went down early, they were done. And quite the opposite happened. You gave Nick Foles a little bit of confidence, a little bit of pep in his step. He was praying on the sidelines. He was feeling good, and while the Patriots did what the Patriots do and came back, Nick Foles was there for the counterpunch and the other counterpunch and the other counterpunch. Now, what's going on with Gronk? He doesn't seem too happy these days, man.
I mean, again, it's why do they always ask immediately after Super Bowl? So you're going to play next year? It's like,
I was kind of
dude,
ridiculous.
I just lost the Super Bowl. It's like, you know, it's kind of like, are you kidding me? Like, oh, my God. And so for me, it's just, you know, we'll see. I hope he plays, obviously. But it's just like, really? That's what... You know, why is that what you always want to ask? And it's kind of like he's never given you any inclination that he wasn't going to play. It's not like he's been in the league for 30 years or something. So, yeah.
But I bet you if I bet you when I go and look at his injury history, It looks like that of an 80-year-old. That man has taken a beating throughout his career. But I just mentioned the intangibles and Nick Foles having all this confidence. Something about Gronk this year, perhaps even last year. And I know he's been hurt quite a bit. It just to me, and you know, this is just my perception, my opinion. Probably not even much of an opinion, but he just doesn't seem like the jolly old Gronk these days. He doesn't seem to have the same, you know, character that he had early in his career. I mean, maybe he's turned into ultra serious Gronk. You know, Gronk score, Gronk mad. Who knows? But no, it's just something that I seem to have picked up. He doesn't seem as jovial as he was in the past. But you know, who knows why? Who knows if I'm making all this stuff up?
For me, it's like, he's been the same Gronk I've seen. I think this year he, to me, just came across more serious than before, but I don't think that's a thing of him getting old. I mean, I just think it's a sign of him maturing. But I saw it, you know, in the game. I saw it when he was playing. He was still smiling. He was still laughing. He was still having fun. I mean, you may not see him dancing shirtless and doing all of the crazy things, but it's kind of the same thing with, you know, with Draymond. You know, when Draymond the first year when they won and he was drunk and on ESPN or whatever doing a little post-game during their parade. So to me it's like, you know, he's kind of grown up and matured a bit. And I think the same thing with Gronk. It's like, okay, when they first come in, they're young, they want to have fun. And kind of as they get older, it's like, yeah, they'll still chirp and still talk. But, you know, some of the antics, you know, that they threw, and then also the loss. So, I mean, it's kind of like, what's really to be excited about after you lose the Super Bowl? Like,
true.
Again, it's just kind of like, what do you expect from the guy to come in? Like, yeah, guys, I'm going to the gym tomorrow, you know, doing the ice bath, you know, take a week off to reflect and then get back in the gym and prepare for next year. Like, dude, I would expect that from, you know, it's the end of the season, you didn't make the playoffs or whatever, but it's like, why, you know, they just literally lost the championship game of what, you know, a pinnacle of their career. And, you know, I think people kind of take that for granted, and then it's just like, well, what the hell do you expect this guy to say in this given point in time? You know, it's kind of like, to me, is just one of those things of, you know, I don't take any stock in it. I don't understand why we put so much stock behind it. It's just like post-Super Bowl questions to me are just the dumbest thing. I think we should just go back to the whole, I'm going to Disney World, and then just, like, let the team, you know, handle it internally with their friends and family, and then the next morning do a big, you know, media day and have them answer all the questions then. But it's just like, oh, we want to know now. And it's like, well,
speaking of questions, speaking of questions, who was the first quarterback to ever say, I'm going to Disneyland after the Super Bowl?
Drew Brees.
Phil Simms. Drew Brees won it like 9 years ago. This was coming out of ways before that.
If you were asking, I had no clue. So if you were asking, I figured it had to be somebody you liked. So the fuck just threw out Drew Brees.
Oh, man. But hey, look. A quick asterisk to that, if you will. To me, Draymond's not going to mature until he stops kicking dudes in you know where. Now, I want to throw one stat at you, and then I want to get your opinion on the Hall of Fame inductions, and then we're going to jump into some NBA talk. I was astonished by the Eagles' third down success rate. 10 of 16, 63%. To put that in perspective, Drew Brees just set the NFL record for an entire season with completion percentage at 72%. So their success rate on third down was 9 percentage points less than an all-time record, which was just broken this season by Brees. And they only had a 42% third down completion percentage rate during the regular season, which jumped to 59% in the previous two playoff games, which is good in and of itself. But I know we talked about the Patriots' defensive struggles, but, man, one thing that jumped out at me during that game was time and time again on third down, and, hey, even fourth down. I think they converted all their fourth down attempts. But time and time again, the Patriots just couldn't get off the field on third down, and that's just – I couldn't let that statistic go remiss.
That is
bend but don't break. Patriots. Bend but don't break.
Yeah, that is typical Patriots. That is why I am happy that Matt Patricia is gone. It was the same thing I said last year. It's or last week of our bend but don't break defense. Our bend but don't break defense. So for me, it's just it doesn't surprise me at all because our defense, again, is just – that's how it's set up. Bend but don't break. And I think that it's that, you know, so that stat doesn't surprise me. And it's just a hope that, you know, we at least get two stops, and then our offense can score the rest of the time. And you got to just, you know, Brady can just outlast.
I believe New England has already named their prospective replacement for Patricia. Is that right?
I have heard names, but no one truly that is. They were looking at the linebackers coach as well, and, you know, I've heard rumor mills, but no true solid people.
Because I heard Greg Schiano's name flying around.
He's one of the people, but like I said, I don't take any stock in anything until to me it's official. So.
And anyway, the 2017 NFL season is officially finished. We are done. But before we finish, do you have any gripes whatsoever? Just real hot take. Any gripes whatsoever about who was inducted to the NFL Hall of Fame this season?
No, I think they got them all right. I think everybody. I mean, some of the names, I don't even know who those dudes are. I had to Google them. But I'm not going to lie, like the senior inductees or whoever. But I definitely believe, I will say this, I'm not a Ray Lewis fan. I can't stand Ray Lewis. As a football player, I give him all respect because the dude was a monster. I don't like Ray Lewis from a personal standpoint. I think the whole Reverend Ray thing that he portrays, it just hurts me to hell. And so that's particularly why I don't like him. But, you know, T.O. deserves it. Again, I'm not a T.O. fan, you know, because of all of his extracurricular activities and his drama. But, again, at the same time, when it came time to play, he put on the pads, he showed up. And, you know,
hey,
Randy Moss admitted
he's
taking plays off. So, you know, there
dude,
you go.
Dude, if you're going to reach national media levels by doing push-ups in your driveway, you deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. Go get him, T.O. Go on with your bad self. But no, T.O.'s antics were kind of ridiculous at times, but just as the case with Randy Moss and Ray Lewis, you can't argue with the product they put on the football field on every Sunday and Monday and Thursday and whatever other day the NFL wants to play in Mexico and Canada and London.
My last take, though, on the Hall of Fame and just on Ray is, Ray, where's the white suit, Ray? Just tell us what a white suit is. Because to this day, I think he did it. So.
We're not going to go there. The shoe does not fit. Moving on. The Cleveland Cavaliers. Something is just not right in the land. Things are not going well. They're not playing well. They're yelling at each other behind closed doors. Kevin Love says he's sick. No one thinks he's sick. Can the man see a doctor? Can we get a little bit of information on whether or not Kevin Love was actually sick? It's 2018. Players' injury news and health records are all over the place. If the man's sick, we should know if he's sick. What's going on in the land, Aaron?
My biggest takeaway is I think it was a lot of things. I think, A, the roster they have constructed, they have no identity of who they are.
Absolutely not.
And I sit back and I laugh because, you know, people – and I'm not mad, you know – because I just sit back and I laugh, and it's like, hey, why the hell do people keep signing Derrick Rose? Like, why? Why does he keep – like, what has he proven to you since he has had all these injuries and all of these things? After his pirate, what he did with the Knicks, he did it again this year, just, I'm going to take a hiatus, not even at the beginning of the year. It's like, bro, you just came off the literally, like, 10 games into the year, you're like, oh, I need a break. Bruh, you just came off of the offseason. What is it that you need to do right now? Last year it was he had to go take care of family, just didn't tell no one. This year he left with a fade, came back with dreads, went and got married allegedly.
Allegedly.
It was just kind of like, I don't know. Look, I ain't going to question what people do. I don't know if he got married. I haven't seen the marriage certificate of the date. I don't know if that's what it is. That's just what people say. I ain't seen. I don't follow.
I'm sure it's all public record. I'm sure it's all public record. We can find this out. We can find out if Kevin Love is sick. We can find out if Derrick Rose got married. We need to get this information. Come on.
Yeah. And then it's just like, and then you go get IT, but you trade for a player who's injured, and it's like, okay, so IT is like my height, and the only thing he got going for him is he's fast and he's quick, but he also had a big hip injury. So, I mean, I kind of think that to me is like, again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a physical therapist. I'll leave that one up to you, but I'm just kind of like, I think 2 and 2, I did enough in health at Paulwood with my public school education to know that you kind of need that part of your body to be completely healthy, to be completely fast again. I mean, I think that's just simple. 1 + 1 = 2. And then you just got Tristan Thompson, who's got the Kardashian curse, and who has, ever since he got his max deal, you know, 5 years, $80-something million or whatever it was, JR can't hit the broadside of the barn. Jay Crowder has one great year.
But he's going to keep shooting. JR's going to keep on shooting. He will go 5 for 55.
It's to me, it's just funny because I sit back and I look, and it's like, at the end of the day, you just constructed a team, and you know, and I don't blame them. And, you know, LeBron's pissed because they won't make trades, but it's like, why? You haven't committed to them, so if they got a high round draft pick and you're not going to commit, why are they going to trade it away to sell out and then just be stuck like Chuck again when you leave and screw them? You know,
hey,
but it's, again,
I'm not a LeBron hater at all. Go ahead and finish your point because I got something to say. Go ahead and tell the people. Keep going. Come on.
That's my frustration with him as an individual. That is my biggest thing. Is LeBron is the biggest. I need this. I need that. I want this. I want that. To where it's like, dude, you are literally the best player in the world right now. And it's like, I don't understand why you need so much when it's like, you got a solid team, you had a solid team, but again, like, you want to put your onus on everything, you want to put your stamp on everything, you want to get involved in everyone's business. And again, that's why Kyrie left. And it's my biggest problem with his non-committal, his non, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do, type thing. It's like, I want to test the free agency market. I want to do this. And it's like, bro, did you say if you're going to stay or you're going to go? That's it.
Now, I've had 3 jobs in my life. The first being a cashier at Farm Fresh in Virginia Beach. Those were good times. Shout out to my coworker, Kyle Hollis, if he listens to the show. The second being construction at the Virginia Beach oceanfront during summers while I was in college. The third is my wonderful career as a physical therapist. And all 3 jobs, when I submitted my resume, once I filled out the application, there was something called a job description, which clearly laid out what my tasks were from 9 to 5 every single day, Monday through Friday, because I don't work the Saturdays and Sundays. Clearly LeBron missed that part of his contract. He does not know what his job description is as an NBA player. He's not a general manager. He's not. But he keeps attempting to be one. And when he doesn't get his way, things get shaken up a bit. And LeBron is probably the best all-around basketball player that we've ever laid our 2 eyes on. But sometimes this guy's just got to let the people upstairs do what the people upstairs do. Now, going off a few things he said about Cleveland, man, they historically they've always had quality depth during the LeBron era, at least the second time around. But when I look at this roster top to bottom, they're lacking youth. They're not spring chickens. They're kind of up there in age. And one thing that's always impressed me about Cleveland is despite their regular season struggles, and sometimes it takes them the length of a season to figure things out, but once that postseason comes around, they just seem to figure it out. But this squad that they have in 2017, 2018, this team that they've constructed, for all the things that are wrong about it, all the things that you critiqued about it, I don't know if they're going to be able to pull it together come April, May, June. It remains to be seen. I agree with you. I don't think they're going to be able to. But it's just one thing that's, I've always been amazed. I talked a lot last week about Belichick and the Patriots. They just grab these players who were dismissed by other teams in the NFL, and they just make it work. Cleveland, they have their ups and downs during the regular season, but come playoff time, they just make it work. But this year, it just doesn't seem – I don't feel it. I don't think they're going to make it work. And having a post-operative Isaiah Thomas running point is part of the problem. You mentioned his speed and him lacking explosiveness after his hip surgery. And just in general, him playing fast, you mentioned that they don't really have an identity. To me, Cleveland doesn't play fast. Isaiah Thomas can run up and down the court as much as he wants, but if J.R. Smith's going to be moping around the corner waiting to catch and shoot, what good does that do? They have a relatively poorly constructed roster. So much goes into game flow and players finding niches and roles on teams. I can sit here and reference the San Antonio Spurs as a prime example of that. And Cleveland just got a bunch of guys who are good at one or two things, call them one-trick ponies, if you will, but this roster just doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the roster makes any sense. I don't think they know what they want to do, who they want to be. There's a lot of turmoil going on, and I think a lot of it has to deal with LeBron and his always wanting to have a piece or a piece of the pie or something to say. I think that has a lot to do with it because people are just like, I'm tired of it. But to me, it's like you also know what you're getting into when you go there. He's the coach. He's the GM. He's involved in everything. And that to me is the biggest difference of what I see and why I don't, proclaim these coaches to be great. Who go out and do, things. To me, it's kind of like, that's why I enjoy the Belichicks. I enjoy the Coach Pops. I enjoy, the Mike Krzyzewskis of the world. Because these guys take a guy, they know what he does well. They know what he doesn't do well. They'll teach you how to be better at the things you don't do. But they're also only going to ask you to do things that you're good at. How many times have you ever seen, Belichick or McDaniel say, okay, hey, Danny Anadola, we're going to put you on the outside now and ask you to run this go route and beat Richard Sherman. That's not what he does. That's not a situation of what he's going to be. So why put him in this situation? It was the same thing when Cooks went out, right? Like, they didn't move Amendola to the outside and say, okay, hey, next man up, go do your job. No. Okay. Hey, Philip Dorsett, guy with the same kind of skill set, capability of Cooks, come in and play. And that, to me, is a sign of great coaching. They don't really have a great coach because when you have a guy like LeBron, you don't really need to be that great. Because, again, he's just going to run and own everything. So you're just kind of, at that point, a political figure and a fall guy. So that, to me, is just one of the things that's wrong as well. And it just seems like it comes a point in time, just like with jobs, with relationships, with everything, where it's kind of like, okay, it's just time. And I think that's kind of where LeBron's at this point with his time in Cleveland. It's you know, I, from an ownership standpoint, completely side with Dan Gilbert until, say, I'm not giving up this pick. I don't think they should have let Kyrie go, but at the same time, they've kind of forced his hand and forced him out.
I want to interject for just a moment. I think Kyrie, for as much as perhaps he and LeBron may not have gotten along, for as unhappy as Kyrie may have been, dude, Kyrie was perfect for that team. I feel like LeBron will be put in check for whatever the heck that means, for whatever that's worth, from time to time, knowing that he had to look across the floor at a guy named Kyrie Irving and realize, this guy's pretty good. Maybe I should take a step back for like 2 minutes. Cleveland doesn't have anyone on the squad that's even remotely as that capability. I think Kyrie was the perfect Jekyll to the Hyde. I think Cleveland lost more than just a good player when they traded away Kyrie. They lost way more than just a player. I'll bring back the magic word intangible again. The intangibles that Kyrie had on that squad, and the respect that he garnered from his teammates and the opposition is one that Isaiah Thomas just doesn't present. Kevin Love doesn't have. Jay Crowder, nah. Everyone else, nope.
Yeah. I mean, they got a lot of problems, a lot of issues. You know, I still think they're good enough to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't think they're that bad that I could see them losing to to the Wizards or the Raptors in, you know, seven games. I think LeBron is enough of an eraser. Playoff LeBron is enough of an eraser. Like I said last week, the only true contenders that I see, for Golden State and, the Cavs are the Celtics. The Celtics are a threat. OKC is starting to get it together. I don't trust Melo. I don't trust, with Robinson going down, I don't have faith in OKC because they're not a deep team. So in a seven-game series and a grind-them-out thing, I just don't trust them. And the same thing with Houston. I don't think they have another level, and that's the biggest thing of what scares me. Of why they don't scare me, I should say, is because I don't think they have another level. I think they're great teams, but when you start to kind of just look at it, and when you say, okay, we saw what KD did, and we've seen what Steph has done in the playoffs and in the finals, when they get into that zone and they lock in, it's a totally different feel, a totally different environment. And I just don't see anyone else giving them struggles just other than the Celtics, just because the Celtics have the ability to just switch on everything, and they just present a physicality and a matchup nightmare for Golden State. I think it'll make a hell of a seven-game series, and I think it's a toss-up.
I'm glad you mentioned physicality because, first of all, I don't want to forget to bring this up. Wouldn't it be something if Kyrie did his best Chris Long and LeGarrette Blount impression and he goes over to Boston and then puts out Cleveland in the playoffs? I would find that quite comical. But you mentioned physicality. Yeah. One thing. I mean, so we're talking about all these issues that Cleveland is having. Let's talk for a minute. We're running a little bit short on time, but it's okay. Bear with us. Hope you're having fun. We sure are. Now, let's talk a minute about how they can possibly fix things, because the trade deadline is yet to come. We're approaching All-Star Weekend. We'll get into that in a few minutes. One thing that Cleveland could benefit from almost immediately is having some low post scoring offensively. I talked last week a little bit about how, I'm just upset that teams generally have, lack of quality big men on offense. And there's been plenty of talk over the years about how forwards and centers are somewhat of a fading breed and et cetera, et cetera. But do you think that if they were to go out, I mean, I'm trying to think of guys that are on the block, someone who's not a superstar, but immediately comes to mind that would be very attainable is a guy like Derek Favors, for example. If Cleveland goes out and gets somebody who can bang around in the paint a little bit, I think that would give them a little bit more flexibility on offense. I think it would help to create somewhat of an identity because LeBron, he does many things well. One of that is being physical. Because Tristan Thompson, I mean, I don't trust him shooting a layup 2 feet away from the basket. Kevin Love, he doesn't want to go anywhere near the paint. He wants to stretch the floor as much as possible. Do you think that having somewhat of a consistent low post offensive presence on Cleveland can help remedy things a little bit, or do you think that's just going to shake things up and that's not somewhat of an answer for them?
That to me is not an answer for them at all. I honestly think they need to truly just trade everyone. I say that is because, I mean, minus LeBron, but they just got to get rid of him because to me it's like, okay, having a consistent low post threat doesn't do much because the game isn't played in the post. So it's kind of like, okay, the big men aren't, if that was the case, then, New Orleans would just dominate with Boogie and AD. But what they really need to do is they need a point guard who is a point guard and more of a distributor. And that's the biggest, to me, one of the biggest issues right now is IT is not. IT is a very ball-dominant point guard. And so you can just see it in the amount of touches when he's on the court compared to with everyone else. Their touches go down and stuff like that. So for me, that's just kind of what I see would be an immediate fix of maybe bringing in a guy like George Hill. But with that, you lose a lot of scoring. IT is explosive and is a guy who can go off, and George Hill is just more of a consistent, steady guy. And so maybe you just say, okay, we'll go with a George Hill, but, say, hey, LeBron, hey, everyone else, you kind of got to step it up. So, I think it's a catch-22 with it. I also think, kind of, they need somebody other than K-Love in the post. They need some sort of rebounding. Tristan Love is not the same Tristan Love, 2 years ago.
He got two things. He got a boatload of money, and he got a Kardashian. He's done.
Exactly. And it's these are the guys to me. It's like, and I laugh because everyone's like, "Oh my God, he's a beast. He's this," and it's like, no, he's not. He's the same Tristan Thompson. He just played good for 1 year. He had a good year. He is who my Dennis Green. They are who we thought they are. He is who we thought he was. Ever since he had one breakout year, he ain't done nothing else.
Oh man. Well, if all you want is a distributor at the one, I mean, bring in Rajon Rondo or Ricky Rubio for that matter. See what happens. Why not? I'm joking.
You need something.
I do not want Cleveland to go get Rajon Rondo or Ricky Rubio. Ladies and gentlemen, that is what we call in American culture a joke. Nope. Let's get into some All-Star Weekend. We'll kind of finish up with bringing up who's going to be in the skills competition, three-point challenge, dunk contest. Aaron and I can just say who we think is going to win each one, and then we'll kind of wrap things up here because we need our beauty sleep. Starting with the skills challenge, I'm just going to name the participants. Aaron, you can tell me who you think is going to win and why. I'll do the same, and we'll go from there. And if I mispronounce some names, forgive me, Spencer Dinwiddie, Joel Embiid, Al Horford, Lauri Markkanen, Buddy Hield from my favorite Sacramento Kings, Jamal Murray, the Canadian, the Unicorn, and Lou Williams. Who are you taking in the skills challenge, Aaron?
So, I got a top three, which I would pick Lou Williams, my boy Kristaps, and Joel Embiid. I honestly think it's either going to be Lou Williams or Joel Embiid, though. I think one of them two is going to take it. And I'm probably leaning more towards Lou Williams just because he's playing out of his mind. And Joel Embiid is still on a minutes restriction and can't play back-to-back games. So you also lose some credit with me on that from being, as much of a beast as the guy is. But I'm also kind of like, well, if you're fresh every day and people play, a lot of minutes and play back-to-back, there is, a little bit to me that I'll give someone a nod over him rather than a guy who, only plays 20 minutes every other day.
I cannot argue with that selection there. However, I took a lot of classes back in the day in which didn't really pay much attention to what was going on. One of those classes was European history, so I couldn't tell you where Latvia is on the map, but I do appreciate versatile big men in the National Basketball Association. So with that said, Kristaps Porzingis is my pick to win the skills challenge. I think he's gonna have a lot of fun doing it. He's gonna make it look good, but it'll be entertaining regardless.
I think he won it last year.
Yes, he did. He did, absolutely. So easy pick for me. Easy pick for me.
Our 3-point challenge, guys, we got Eric Gordon, the Splash Brother, Klay Thompson, Bradley Beal, PG-13, Kyle Lowry, Devin Booker, Wayne Ellington, and Tobias Harris. On this one, Klay has to be the front runner. Bradley Beal, he reminds me a lot of Allen Houston, of one of those guys. If he gets hot and gets streaky, he can light it up. So he's a definite threat. But Mr. Consistency, Klay Thompson.
Well, a little bit of a footnote on Bradley Beal. When he was a child, his babysitter was the well-known rapper Nelly, if you guys didn't know that. Now, with these 3-point challenges, I think a lot of importance has to be placed on endurance and having a quick release. So with that said, I cannot put my money anywhere else other than with the Splash Brother, Klay Thompson. I would love it if Steph was in this thing too. I can't recall. Can you remember if any year that both Steph and Klay were in the 3-point contest at the same time?
Yeah, I think it was either 2 or 3 years ago. They were both in.
I believe there was.
So, I think Steph said he's doing it again next year. But I know recently he's been one of the players who's taken All-Star Weekend off, so to speak, of just more of a use it as a time to rest and play, because I know that was always a thing they always talk about. That they always ask, okay, who's from an All-Star game perspective of who kind of wants the time off and who really wants to go at it. So I expect the Splash Brother Klay Thompson to hold it down for the Yay area.
Yeah, and he went to college out there as well, I believe. Washington State, is that correct? Or
yeah.
Eastern Washington. I, something Washington. I think it was Washington State. Do you have those facts for us? Yeah, Washington State. Okay, I was right. Yeah. So Klay Thompson cannot go against that man right there. There goes that man. Dunk contest. I'm always disappointed, or in recent years, I've been somewhat disappointed in the participants. I think, you know, who wouldn't love LeBron James in the dunk contest? Who wouldn't love a Paul George in the dunk contest?
Me?
I could throw 20 other names out there.
Oh. He does the same dunk over and over. I'm glad he does not participate.
I'm just talking about over the course of the last, you know, 5 years or so. I'm not talking about 2018 LeBron. But anyway, beggars can't be choosers. So we have Victor Oladipo, Larry Nance Jr., another junior, Dennis Smith, and Donovan Mitchell. Well, I mean, I'm going to go with Oladipo for the simple fact that I think he is probably the most creative dunker out of this group. And I mentioned endurance and having a quick release as being key factors in a three-point contest. I believe that creativity is one of the biggest assets a dunker can have in a dunk contest. And I think Oladipo in the past has had some tricks up his sleeve, and I think he will in All-Star Weekend as well. What do you think?
I'm going with Dennis Smith Jr., the guy.
Dennis Smith.
The guy, that's what he's known for. So he's actually got me pretty excited for it, just because he's known for being a high flyer. He's known for rocking the rim. So, you know, I'm interested to see what he's got up his sleeve, and I'm looking for him to throw it down.
Throw it down, big man. Apparently this year the winning players of the All-Star game are going to reap the reward of $100,000. Is this accurate?
So that is the incentive. I think it will work, but B, here's the biggest thing that I think that they seem to forget. I don't want to see defense. Like, I don't really want to see these guys lock it up. Like, I enjoy the 162 to 158 score. Like, let them
with
play
168
wide open. Yeah, and it's like, let them play wide open. This is what, you know, the fans want to see. It's an entertaining game. You know, no one wants to see the, you know, because I would take it to baseball, and it's like, I think their All-Star game is boring because it's like, it's super strategic. Like, the person, you know, whoever wins gets home field advantage and stuff like that. So it's just kind of like, man, let the guys come out there and just have fun. You know, the last 2 minutes, 3 minutes, okay, lock it down, try and win the game, and do that. But, like, to make it a competitive, like, 100 to 92 kind of basketball game, it's like, well, that was boring. Like, you know. It's All-Star weekend. It's supposed to be fun. Just let them play. Let them have fun. You know, give the fans what they want to see. But, you know, I think for the most part, no fans really want to see this whole, you know, true basketball regular season, you know, game. You know, who cares? Like, just let them ball. Have fun. I want to see Steph pull up from the other three-point line and try to hit a three. You know, stuff like that. So
I want to comment that with the Pro Bowl, both the winning and losing teams, the players from both the winning and losing teams have a monetary bonus. The winning team receives more money, of course, but win or lose, just playing in the Pro Bowl nets you some money. I believe it's $64,000 for the winners and $32,000 for the losers. So the NBA isn't the only league to have this monetary reward for success.
Well, real quick, breaking hot take out off the press. Chris Stapps is going down with an ankle injury.
What? Oh, that's definitely gonna Oh no! Oh, I want to see the big man win the skills competition. You better.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm sorry, it's a knee. He left in the second quarter of tonight's game with a knee injury.
Can we re-record this whole show so I can change my face there?
So there you go.
Hopefully it's nothing serious. You know, speaking sincerely for a moment. Hopefully it's not a major injury for poor Zingas. He's one of the most exciting young players in the league.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully it's just a little tweak, sprained knee, something like that. But and as of right now, it looks like the Cavs are going down again. I think if I just read that right.
Somebody find them a big man who can score in the paint, and find them a point guard who can distribute and run the floor. Boom.
Yeah.
Got it
they
all.
They are currently
settled.
Down, 93-111 in the fourth quarter. So, but.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, unless you have something else you want to say to these wonderful people on the other end, Aaron, I think we can wrap episode 2 up of Run the Point.
All right.
Any final words?
Sounds like a plan. Hey, congrats
right.
to the Eagles.
All right.
And on to the NBA, in the words of Belichick.
Oh, and pretty soon that other sport will come around where they throw a ball and hit it with a bat. We'll get to that shortly. But thanks for listening. Tune in again next week. We're out.
All right. Peace.